From Toronto, Canada, this is 1 Megahertz, the Apple II podcast. In this episode, a tiny operating system becomes mouse-friendly, a pair of utilities gets more useful, and the streak of exciting emulator news continues with a sweet new addition. Also, I'll have a look at a fast new puzzle solver and a pair of new podcasts, one about the Apple II and one that isn't. And as promised, I completely ruin the collectible value of a vintage Apple II game. Find out which one coming up on 1 Megahertz for August 2006. Welcome to 1 Megahertz, 8-bit Apple news and 2-bit Apple reviews. I'm Carrington Vanston. Thanks for listening. July has come, and July has gone, and so has Kansas Fest. I've been away, so I've missed out on reading all the on-the-scene recaps in real time, but I'm really looking forward to finding out about all the fun that I missed. Okay, that's a weird way to put it, but I think you know what I mean. One way to catch up, if, like me, you missed out on the event itself, is to read the recaps posted by people who did attend. Now, as I said, I haven't had a chance to catch up completely, but I'm sure that such from-the-field stories exist, so I'll try to find them and have links to them and maybe to some photographs in the show notes by the time you can hear this podcast. But the big news, the best news, well, for me anyway, is that the dates for Kansas Fest 2007 have already been announced. Once again, Rockhurst University in Kansas City, Missouri will play host, and the event itself will take place from July 17th through July 22nd, 2007. I have already marked it on my calendar, and I will definitely be going with camera in hand. Oh, and I guess with microphone in hand as well. So, this time next year, you can expect to hear all about my first Kansas Fest experience. Very exciting. And now, the news. First up, a dashingly handsome and witty Canadian Apple II podcast host, oh wait, that's me, this month launched a second podcast called 5 Things You Didn't Know That You Didn't Know. It's a very short weekly comedy podcast based in part on a skit from his/my earlier series, the Monster Feet Variety Show. I tried to interview myself about it earlier in the week, but every time I called, my line was busy. Ba-dum-ba. I can tell you, though, that each episode of the 5 Things podcast is less than 2 minutes long, so what it lacks in actual comedy, it makes up in brevity. And you'll find the 5 Things You Didn't Know That You Didn't Know podcast, along with 1 Megahertz, the Apple II podcast, at the monsterfeet.com site right now. Turning to less self-serving Apple II news, the word on the street, by the street, I mean the internet, is that another Apple II podcast is in the works. And no, it's not by me. I've got my hands full with two podcasts all of my own. This one is going to be called A2 Unplugged, and it'll be hosted by Ryan Suanaga. He presented a podcast-related session at Kansas Fest this year and announced then that he'd be launching a new Apple II podcast soon. No mention was made of my own little podcast, but then again, there were only about 25 of you who downloaded the show last month. I'm not exactly setting the internet on fire over here. So I think this new podcast is great news. It looks like Ryan is far more involved and connected with the Apple II community than I am. So no doubt he's going to bring a level of professionalism and knowledge that I can't even approach. He's also no doubt going to make his podcast just the kind of thing you wish I'd made of mine, so we all benefit. But I will stay up here in Canada doing my thing. I'm sure that A2 Unplugged is going to end up being much more the official Apple II podcast. Well, I'm going to keep mine a very subjective thing. I mean, this is really just me documenting my hobby, and I kind of like it that way. So I, for one, am really looking forward to subscribing to Ryan's podcast. I'm not sure quite when it's going to start, but when it does, I'll be a-downloading. In other Apple II news, I see that Contiki has been updated to support the Apple Mouse. Now, the Contiki operating system is billed as a, Let's see, a highly portable, minimalistic operating system for a variety of constrained systems, ranging from modern 8-bit microcontrollers for embedded systems to old 8-bit home computers. Whew, quite the mouthful. And the latter, of course, is what interests most of us. Now, excitingly, Contiki offers TCP/IP support when coupled with an Apple II Ethernet card, such as the UtherCard or the Lance GS. It comes in both a 40-column and an 80-column variant, the former requiring at least a 2+ with language card, and the latter at least an enhanced 2E. And as I said, this latest version supports the Apple Mouse, and it also has, which I think is pretty cool, a text mode screensaver. Well, okay, actually, while I say all this is cool, I haven't really tried it out myself, but I do intend to grab a copy and install it on probably a 2GS, and I'll tell you about the experience in a later episode. Now, also upgraded this month were both Safe 2 and CiderPress. CiderPress is Andy McFadden's Apple II file and disk utility for Windows, which is billed as being like Shrinkit for Windows, which sounds pretty handy. The upgrade brings CiderPress to version 2.4.2, and it's available as shareware for $9.95 US. Now, Safe 2 by Ewan Wanup is an FTP client. Safe stands for Spectrum Automated File Exchange, and it was recently upgraded to version 2.0.1b6, and it's available now, and it's free. Also free is Eric Shepard's new Mac OS X version of Sweet 16, an Apple 2GS emulator. It's a universal binary, so it's a great emulation solution for both PowerPC Macs as well as the new Intel-based Macs, because they can't run Classic. And I, as an owner of an Intel Mac Mini, am very happy that Eric Shepard has gone and done all this work. According to the site, Sweet 16 for Mac OS X is based on the BOS version, which itself was based on Bernie to the Rescue. Sweet 16 fully emulates the Ensoniq 5503 chip that powers the 2GS sound system, including full stereo sound. You can print using an included LaserWriter driver and manage disks right from within Sweet 16, including creating, mounting, locking, and unlocking them. And you can copy text directly to the Mac's clipboard or grab screenshots. And it's even got a ZipGS accelerator emulator included. I mean, this is one fully featured emulator, and remarkably, it's free. Definitely a must download for Mac users. In fact, I say pause the podcast and go download it right now. Don't worry about me. I'll wait here. Oh, might as well go browsing through your iPod while I wait. Maybe I can make fun of your musical taste in a later episode. Let's see. What have you got? Rush? Styx? REO Speedwagon? Boy, you like the arena bands, huh? Wait, Yanni? Oh, and Zamfir, Master of the Pan Flute? Oh, this is going to be just too easy. Oh, you're back. Did you get Sweet 16? Good. Yanni. Nothing. In other news, a few episodes ago, I mentioned that there was a new version of the Replica One by Vince Briel, or Brile. That's the Apple One replica available in either kit form or fully assembled. Well, the new version is out, and it's called the Replica One SE, and it has an optional serial to USB adapter. They also come with Ken Wesson's symbolic assembler called Crusader, which stands for, get this, Ken's Rather Useless Symbolic Assembly Development Environment for the Replica One. How's that for an acronym? Vince has 50 boards in stock, and the kits start at $159 US. They're available for order now. And speaking of cool hardware, A2 Retro Systems has announced they'll be doing another production run of the Ethernet card, an Ethernet card for Apple IIs. I think I mentioned in an earlier podcast that they'd sold out of their previous run, and that I definitely want to get my hands on one, so this is great news for me. I may even be able to save myself some pennies, though, because this weekend I was offered a spare Apple II that seems to have an Ethernet card already in it. And in Canada, we have an ancient traditional saying for such events, and that is, score! The A2 Retro Systems site hasn't been updated with the news of the next production run, at least not as of the time I'm recording this, but I hear tell there's a waiting list. So if you want to pick up an Ethernet card, and why wouldn't you, I'm sure if you email Glenn Jones over at A2 Retro Systems, he'll point you in the direction of the queue. I'll have a link to that site in the show notes. Another site that's going to get itself linked is the Gallery of Undiscovered Entities, or GUE, over at vintagegaming.org. It's not an Apple II only site, but it will definitely be of interest to fans of old Apple games. The purpose of the site is to, well, how do they put it? Let's see. Provide information on lesser known games and software publishers of the late 1970s and early 1980s, and to preserve, as best as possible, the original game data. Good for them. It's not just handy, it's also a fun thing to read through. It's only been up for about a month, and at the moment there's limited information posted, but what's there is really interesting. It has information about publishers such as Phoenix Software and Coastal Software, and soon American Eagle. Along with the game descriptions, it shows packaging variations, screenshots, and even hosts disk images. I really liked reading about the games that I'd either only dimly remembered, like Adventure in Time and Gruds in Space, or that I hadn't heard of at all, like a really interesting looking one called Masquerade that I'm now going to try to track down. Fans of obscure vintage games should definitely go check this site out, and of course, blah blah blah, show notes link, blah blah blah. Now, straddling the podcast this month between the news and the review section is the news of a brand new program for the Apple II, Sudoku Solver, created by Michael Mahan and Scott Hemphill. It was released early in the month and already has been upgraded to version 2.0. I guess that's the problem with doing a monthly podcast like this. I can miss complete versions of things. So what is Sudoku? It's a logic puzzle comprised of 9 3x3 grids of numbers, with each individual grid containing the digits 1 through 9. Now, the 9 grids are themselves arranged in a larger 3x3 grid of grids, with each row and column that cuts across this larger arrangement also containing one each of the digits 1 through 9. Now, the key is that no individual 3x3 grid has any duplicate numbers, and no number appears more than once in any row or column. The puzzles start out with a handful of numbers already filled in, and you have to supply the missing ones through a process of deduction. I grabbed a copy of the disk image and played with it this month, and it's terrific fun. It's a very good implementation. First, it's fast, with no lag at all when you're navigating through the puzzle or solving numbers. It's been programmed so that you can just zip along using any Apple II. The grid is implemented in the Apple in 40 column mode, and the lack of newfangled game sizzle like color graphics doesn't detract from this game at all. In fact, the simple monochrome presentation is ideal for this sort of puzzle game. This is exactly the sort of thing that I was talking about back in the first podcast, about how the Apple II is still very much a useful and enjoyable computer. Sudoku Solver is just that, a great implementation of a currently popular puzzle that doesn't suffer in the least by being hosted on an 8-bit Apple computer. In fact, it thrives. Now, as for reviewing the software, I give it a thumbs up. I think it's fantastic. I really only had one quibble with the program, and it's a very minor one that had to do with navigation. The program nicely lets you move off one side of the screen and appear on the opposite side, so you can quickly navigate from one cell to another without having to always go all the way across the screen. But I'd sometimes get tripped up because when you exit one side of the screen, you don't enter quite at the parallel point on the other side. Instead, you've moved one row or column farther. Now, it could be, and in fact probably is, that everybody else prefers it that way, but I would always expect my cursor to stay on the same horizontal or vertical line when I warped around. And if I was moving quickly, I'd sometimes place numbers in incorrect squares just as a result of not paying attention. And I rarely pay attention. Wait, what was I saying? Okay, that was a cheap one. Anyway, that is a very minor quibble with an overall excellent piece of software. If you enjoy Sudoku puzzles or would just like to try one out, then I recommend Sudoku Solver 2.0 without reservation. It runs on any 64K lowercase capable Apple II with AppleSoft Basic. Michael and Scott have also made the program available for download as a disk image and a Shrinkit disk archive. They've even posted the AppleSoft and Merlin program listings, as well as the original C version of Scott's Solver program. The download site even has an interesting summary of the problems they encountered and the techniques they applied when they were developing the software. So it's a good read and it's a good game. Run, don't walk. Now, I know that last month I said I'd be reviewing an Infocom game this month, but unfortunately, I just didn't have time to finish it yet, so I'm going to hold off until the next podcast. I can tell you that the game I selected to play is Ballyhoo, and so far I am both stumped and laughing, and that's a good combination. I am digging it. I'll be able to tell you next month if I dug it right through to the end. But this month I am going to tell you about how I ripped open a vintage, sealed, pristine, collectible edition of a game called Dondra. D-O-N-D-R-A. Dondra, or its full title, Dondra: A New Beginning, is a graphical text adventure that was published by Spectrum Holobyte in 1987. I think it was later reworked or republished as Questmaster 1 by a company called Miles Computing. Now, the version I have, Dondra, came in a blue box sporting a hologram on the cover. The hologram shows a warrior woman riding a bird, and it looks like something straight out of the animated movie Heavy Metal. Now, this game and I have a bit of history. Back in 1987, I used to frequent a local computer store in Toronto that sold software for a range of microcomputers, including my beloved Apple. At one point, I was in the store hemming and hawing over which game to buy. This was after school on a Friday, if I recall, and the place was packed. There was some sort of sale on. So what to get, what to get. Finally, I decide to pick up the game Dondra. See, the back of the box promises one of the largest quests ever, like no other in the world. Ha ha! Just the thing for young Carrington the Pale. That would keep me in the basement for weeks. So I bring the display box up to the counter. They kept the real boxes in the back, and I find out that the only copy they have left is the display copy. The contents look fine, but the box is a little beat up. Now, I can either take that one, they say, and they'll even give me a deal on it because it's open, a serious discount, but they also say I won't be able to return it if it doesn't work. So what to do, what to do? Well, I decide to think about it, and I go home. The next morning, I wake up and I think, what am I, crazy? I got nothing to play. So I hop back on my bicycle, and I pedal my way to the store to buy the game. But when I get there, it's gone. Now, I don't mean the game is gone. I mean, the store is gone. I look to the left, I look to the right, no computer store sign, no computer store shelves, and no computer store crowd that obviously knew a lot more about that sale than I did. And worst of all, no one of the largest quests ever, like no other in the world. Young Carrington the Pale was now young Carrington the Disappointed. And Pale. I remember standing there, you know, astride my bicycle, thinking, how did this happen so quickly? Who took my store away and built a whole new store? And how did they do it overnight? Have I ripped my Van Winkle? So I'd lost my computer store, and none of the other ones I ever went to had Dondra. Time marched on, and eventually I forgot all about one of the largest quests ever, like no other in the world. Until recently, I was walking through the aisles of eBay, and I spotted a strangely familiar box of software for sale. And you can guess which one. That's when the whole disappearing computer store thing flooded back to me. So I bid, I won, I got. Now, the best part was, it was still sealed in the original plastic. It was exactly what I'd held out for, except that it took me 19 years longer than I expected. And then, luckily, I noticed a bunch of other sealed copies for sale on eBay, which is good because I was darn tootin' going to be opening this one up. It's nice to know that there are many other copies out there available for people who would rather collect them, people who are wiser about these things than me. And I, however, had waited long enough. It was time to play. And I turned on the microphone when I opened it up. I figured if I was not going to preserve the value, I could at least preserve the moment in which I destroy the value. That moment sounded like this. So I'm holding in my hands the first in the Questmaster series. It's a blue box. Dondra, A New Beginning. On the front, it has a hologram. Ooh. I'm waving it back and forth, in case you're wondering. It's got a lady riding a bird, and she looks like, well, she looks like the lead singer for a hair band. The back has pictures of the graphics, which look pretty keen. It claims to be an amazing graphics quest like no other in your world. The quest is, unfortunately, they've used one of those fonts that's half scripted, half impossible to read. It says, in the first of the Questmaster series, you are Terna, last of the Talasian race. The adventure begins in the futuristic world of Dondra, where you will embark on a journey to find the crystal prism of... Oh, come on. Hehe Utotulo. That's got to be something that's scrambled in the game. Only this ancient piece of the Master Staff will help you in your battle to rid the universe of the evil Kalnar? Oh, nice names, dude. Let your imagination run wild in this extensive land filled with mythical characters, superb cartoon-style graphics, and detailed animation sequences. From the battle with the vicious mutoids to the strange encounter with a very beautiful lioness. From the unforgiving wildebeest to the incredible flight over Dondra. Throughout this fantasy adventure, you will be constantly challenged. Sounds good. Tells me it's got a zoom-like effect. When I look at objects, not only do you get a description, you also get a close-up view in many cases. Talks about how good the parser is, that there's one of the largest quests ever, over 100 original pictures, and more than 30 animated sequences for any level adventurer. Well, that bodes well for me. And as I said, it is sealed. That's me shaking it at the microphone, and now I am going to devalue this by ripping off the shrink wrap, and let's take a look inside. Okay, this is the sound. Ah, that is what it sounds like when doves cry. If by doves, I mean software collectors. It's one of those slide-out boxes. Let me open up the inside. It's white and plain. Okay, so inside, the first thing I see is a folded piece of paper that says, open in case of frustration. Well, I will leave that folded, because I will trust my abilities. Foolishly, at least as long as that microphone's playing. And then I have a book, Spectrum Holobyte. It's got the same lady on a bird, but it's just drawn this time. Just one color, and it seems to be the instruction booklet. Ah, okay, yes, it's got a backstory. Player instructions on how to load the game. The usual stuff about how to use the parser. Type in commands, that sort of thing. It's got a full page talking about its copy protection. It's got notes on copy protection and piracy. Nobody likes copy protection. Yet they seem to have implemented it. Okay. The backstory is delivered in what look like four little scrolls printed in this book about my destiny and what's happened in the years 2187 and 2199, about how Kalnar has reached Dondra and initiated his devious plan to abolish this nucleus of organization. So I will read that to myself later. Let's see what else we got. One, two, three. Three discs labeled sides, okay, boot disc, good, and then up to side six. It is version 1.01. Ooh, got myself an updated version of the game. And what else is in here? There is a registration card and Nothing else. Okay, so your usual stuff. Not up to the standards of what I found this month in the Ballyhoo game from Infocom. But it's very cool. This does have the advantage of this keen hologram on the front here, though, as I wiggle it. Oh, my hologram fell off. I'm already disappointed with my game. My hologram has fallen off and fallen onto the ground. Oh. Well, here's a bit of trivia for you. In case you ever wondered what's underneath the hologram on Dondra, it's just a big white rectangle with no printing. Disappointed in my hologram. Oh, well. Okay, and that's how it began. And so I proceeded to play the game. Now, to quickly review the gameplay, if I had to summarize in one word what it's like to finally play one of the largest quests ever, like no other in the world, then I would pick the word short. Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't think so, huh? Now, maybe it was my 19 years of anticipation. I mean, that's a whole heck of a lot of foreplay. But the game just flew by. I finished it in one sitting, straight through, in just a few hours. I've spent far longer playing Ballyhoo this month, and I don't think I'm nearly finished that one. In the end, Dondra just really isn't that big of a game. Now, it was fun. I did like it. I do love me those adventure games, and there is some good stuff here. There are a few good puzzles, and a few nice and hard ones. The very first one is one of the hardest in the game, I found, and it has a nice logic to it. Once you solve it, it seems fair, so that's a good puzzle. But there are a couple of others that are very hard to solve if you're not the guy who made the game, or at least privy to his innermost thoughts. You know, there's one in which you have to take something that isn't shown in the graphics, and it isn't described in the text, and it's something which you would not expect to be there. It's like you're standing in an executive office and you have to type, "Take scuba gear." I mean, why would you think there's scuba gear in an invisible box in this office? So because of puzzles like that, unless I miss something really big, I think this is a game that you can't compete without a little help from a walkthrough. And that's too bad. It really mars the overall experience, as does the fact that this game, like the game Escape that I talked about last month, has a bunch of those coin flips of death. There are locations in the game Dondra where if you go, you die. And there's no way you can know ahead of time that those locations will kill you. It's like you're standing in a hallway and you can go left or right. Okay, I'll go right. Ha! You died. Start again. Come on, what is that other than lazy writing? Why even have locations like that? I can see a game saying, you faintly smell gas, and if I stay in that room more than two turns, I die. That's fair. That's adventure gaming. But to just say, you went left instead of right, so you're dead, well, that's not fun. Not if I couldn't anticipate it, and there's nothing I could equip myself with to survive it. I mean, after all, this is billed as one of the biggest adventure games ever. It's supposed to have over 100 locations, and you're punishing me for exploring? Now, even with all of that, there are some very good aspects to the game. Most of the puzzles are fairly good. The graphics are excellent. They're vibrant, they're interesting, and they really show off the abilities of the Apple II. The talk on the box about the zoom-in effect is a little overrated, but there is some good animation, including a really cool flight sequence near the end. There's also an interesting backstory, if it's a little bit silly, and the game has a whole bunch of nice touches that remind you you're on an alien world. The game loads each room very fast, given the graphics, and the parser is very good. At the end of the day, it's a fairly fun game to play with a bunch to recommend it. I mean, okay, yes, it's short. And yes, it has those annoying coin flips of death, and sure, you need to be psychic to win without help, but the rest of the game is just good enough that I say, so what? Save as you go, have a walkthrough nearby, and you'll have some fun. I wouldn't say it's worth a 19-year wait, but if you're an adventure game fan, it's probably worth playing. And I guess it's also probably time that I wrapped up this month's long podcast, so as always, you'll find links and files and such in the show notes of the 1 MHz section of the MonsterFeet.com website. Usually, the show notes include copies of the disc images for the games that I've reviewed, but I haven't found images of the Dondra discs yet. I'll upload at least a version of the Questmaster 1 remake, and if I get a chance, I'll try to make images out of the Dondra discs that I have here, so I can share those as well. In the meantime, feedback for the show can be sent by email, ideally plain text email, to feedback@monsterfeet.com. Oh, and speaking of which, about a dozen of you wrote in last month, which I really appreciate. I love hearing from you, so thank you. But the most frequently asked question, almost unanimously asked question, was, why don't I read some letters on the air? And the answer is, well, I think that'd be boring. I mean, I don't mean to insult what you wrote. I love getting your letters. I just mean that I'm trying to avoid the stuff that I wouldn't find interesting if I was listening to me rattle on. The letters read out in other podcasts are always the same. It's always, oh, I love your show. I'm glad you're doing this. Why don't you do a show about whatever topic? It all seems very self-congratulatory to the podcast. And frankly, my ego is already big enough. Now, I do love getting recommendations of software that I should check out, but I think it seems more appropriate to give credit to the person who recommended it when I eventually do a review instead of, you know, months ahead of time. Now, if I get a letter that says something like, you stupid Canadian, I hate your show, you bore me, the news is old, the reviews are all wrong, why do you think I'd want to hear about your stupid shopping trip from 20 years ago? I'm coming to Canada and we're having it out. Now that is a letter I might read on the air, along with my response slash restraining order. Now, next month, on the other hand, I do want us to get a bit of a dialogue going, because I'm going to tell you why the fact that I have never wanted a cartoon head cookie jar, and yet one day found myself saddled with a whole heap of them, means that you can get me to send you a free box of Apple II software of your choice. Want to know why? And how? And what? I'll tell you next month. See you then. You've been listening to 1 MHz, the Apple II podcast. Feedback and suggestions can be sent by email to feedback@monsterfeet.com. All the files and links mentioned in this episode can be found in the show notes in the 1 MHz section of the monsterfeet.com website. And like all Monsterfeet podcasts, all the original material in this episode is released to the public domain.